place a call, please. Thank you for using AT&T.
Thank you for calling Checker Auto Parts. Para Español, marque uno. We're sorry, we could not locate a store within a 50-mile radius of your calling area. If you would like to find the nearest store using an alternative telephone number, please enter the 10-digit telephone number now. Do not enter a 1 first. We're sorry, we could not locate one of our stores using the telephone number you entered. For auto parts, purchases, and delivery from anywhere in the U.S., please visit our website at www.partsamerica.com. Thank you for calling. Goodbye.
Welcome to Radio Freak America 4. I'm Dual Parallel. I'm joined by Rax and Condor. Glad you guys are back.
Hey, thanks, man. Finally recovered after St. Patrick's Day, so ready to rock.
When you had a Guinness, right? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, many Guinness. Many Guinness.
How you doing, Condor?
Pretty good. How about you?
Excellent. Did you, by any chance, did you go war driving after we did?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
And how was it?
Pretty good. Very good.
What'd you find?
And, two or three, I guess. Hits, I guess you could say.
Uh-huh.
Do you want me to say it now? I mean...
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was driving with Lyht, I'll tell you. L-I-H-T. He provided the car, and I got the laptop, and we went around, and we went war driving.
Now,
we went up around the... we thought for sure some of his boys would have a...
Let's just say a major metropolitan university. How's that?
Oh, yeah.
Major metropolitan university. But, you know, the other thing is, too, guys, you can't call it war driving anymore. I mean, the country's at war, and it sounds really negative, so...
But have you actually declared?
According to... Oh, yeah, he's got it going, man. According to Evil Pete Shipley from Bay Area Wireless User Group, BAWUG.org, he's kind of the godfather of all this stuff. So they call it wilding now, wireless land discovery. So you went wilding.
We actually declared war on. Some guy living in a hole?
We declare war on wireless land.
Some guy living in a hole. Did he have a 802.11b?
How far does that go out of a cave? That's what I'm wondering.
We're in war? Who have we declared war on?
In
a hole?
War against terrorism. That's a whole other show.
Okay.
That's a whole other story.
We will not talk about politics, but we will be politically correct.
Okay. Sorry.
Oh yeah, fuck that. Anyway.
So you went wilding, and you went around a university, which I would think would be a great place to find wireless networks.
Yeah, and we've got some boys that have some wireless networks, because, you know, some, I don't know, maybe they might be playing Counter-Strike or something like that. You never know.
Sure.
So we decided, well, hey, let's go for it. We went, and we were driving around near the big sport place, and we said, you know, we should probably go home. And he said, yeah, all right, well, let's drive around here one more time. So we drove around one more time. I found that we got a hit. It just popped up. It said 12%. Then it jumped all the way to 44%. Then we found that it was a girl's dormitory. And that was pretty surprising.
Well, you don't think girls are the thing, man? Geek girls rock, man.
Yeah, man.
No, I'm not saying that they don't. I was just surprised, and then afterwards, we found it, we parked, and we didn't get anything. We just got signal strength. We got no serve data. I even ran a port packet sniffer, found nothing. So we drove around some more, and then we found, near the airport-ish area, we found, an airline company had a wireless network. I think, Rax, I think you mentioned that when we went wilding.
Yeah, that's they had found quite a bit of open stuff before, including something maybe in the same area that Condor was doing, and it's actually kind of surprising. This was all pre 9/11, mind you, but one of the airlines, their operations center, didn't really have things locked down very much. Didn't mess around, didn't mess up with anything, but just, you know, seeing what's opened out there.
Did you pick up an IP?
Just internal IPs is all we had. What did you get, Condor?
Anything.
Did you even get SSIDs, Condor?
No, we got nothing.
Now,
we got signal strength on them. I think that we will visit that airlines again. I think now that I look back on the ASU event, maybe that was, the university event. I think that was might have been some girls with maybe an iMac or something like that running airport.
Yeah, well, plus that's the university that Condor's talking about too. I know that, and probably most universities around that too. They have wireless out for the students on campus in various areas. So if it's close to a dorm or something, and that it would probably be a logical kind of conclusion that stuff would be there.
Yeah, I would assume they would have that. At most major universities now. I mean, what better place for it? Now I bring this all up because a week after the last 2600 meeting, the three of us went wilding, and we found three, if I'm correct. Well, wait, one was Raxus, but we found two others, and we did get SSIDs. One was in a downtown area of a major metropolitan city, and the other was... It was by the airport, wasn't it? Kind of an industrial area, like right on the edge of residential and industrial area.
Yeah, it was near a freeway, a little apartment complex or something. There, we got internal IP. We didn't get anything outside.
Oh, we did. I didn't remember that. We did get an internal. Okay. Now, all this prompted me to go out and get. We used Rax's laptop and his wireless adapter, and he had a D-Link. Was a DW120. And it prompted me to go get one, and I used it, and it worked great. I was very pleased. It worked great on my laptop. I went and bought another one, and I plugged one into my Pentium 133 here and used AnalogX Proxy and made it a proxy server, and it works great. And I love walking around my house with my laptop, getting the Internet. And anybody that drives by, you know what? Please, feel free. Anybody that wants to, drive by, set up your browser to use proxy server 10.0.0.1. That's my proxy, and anybody could get Internet in front of my house. And I've told people about it. You know, not many people have 802.11. I was so surprised. I thought it'd be pretty mainstream right now.
It's coming down a lot in price. Things are getting built in. It's still a little bit funky playing with some of the stuff. You know, you got to deal with the client for the for the wireless thing, then you have to deal with the client for, you know, or the thing for your OS.
Right.
A little funky. But what Dual forgot to mention, too, on this D-Link, the reason I bought this particular one, other than I got a smoking deal on it at our show sponsor, Fry's Electronics.
Fry's is God.
Feels like they're a sponsor. But it's a external USB one, and the cool thing about this is when you're doing wilding, your car actually acts as an antenna shield. So if you just have like a PCMCA with the antenna on that, you won't pick up as good a signal. So on some of them, like the Lucent line, the Orinoco line, they have a place for an external antenna. But so I got this one. It has an external USB, and I took a couple of zip strips and made sure the end wouldn't fall off. But as we were driving around, you know, plug the USB end into the laptop and then stick the receiver end out the window, and you get some pretty darn good reception doing that.
Very good. Actually, just you close the window right on it, right, and it sits right in the door.
Now, place, yeah.
Now, Condor, you've got a yours is USB also, right? You have a, but you don't have a D-Link. What do you have?
Compact.
A compact, and it's saying USB. You got a long cable, stick out the window.
Right. But what I had to do is I never had those zip ties. I had to stick my hand out the window.
Dude, that's ghetto.
You buy some ties, man.
No doubt.
Duct tape.
Wait, I got one. You're so ghetto, you play Frisbee with a hubcap.
Now, all right, enough. I'm drawing the line at your mama jokes, okay?
Okay.
Condor, man, you sounded so white when you said this.
No doubt. No, but that's okay.
That's good.
That's okay. Next, I want to talk about something. Actually, Condor brought this up because he liked the last show because I talked about Linux. He loves Linux, and he wanted to talk about it. So I thought we should devote a little time to Linux, talk about the distros that we use, maybe talk about some new terms that people might want to use. I know we used one already, Wilding. We'll talk about another one. And then I want to talk about some brand new distributions that are coming out and people should be aware of. First, for this subject, I want to bring up this new term, and Rax, I want you to tell the listeners all about it.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone is saying, you know, Unix or Unix-like operating system or Linux, and, you know, I figured we needed some kind of term
PSD.
Kind of, you know, flow everything together. And, you know, some people used to write, like, U*INX because Unix was a trademark and all that kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. So I came up with the term Unish. It's a Unix-ish, so it's a Unish kind of operating system. So that way we just kind of encompass everything. Because, see, I'm not really much of a Penguin fan. You know, I'm more of a BSD kind of beastie guy.
Right. And, you know, and when people say Nix, of course we're just, you know, arguing semantics. We're not arguing, but when people say Nix, you know, you're kind of, you don't think, well, I don't think about the BSDs. I like this Unish.
I think it encompasses it all. There was actually, and we were talking about this a little bit before the show, if you go to onlamp.com, that's O'Reilly's, one of their websites, and there's a great article there. It's called Why Caldera Released Unix, A Brief History. And actually, Caldera owns the rights now to the original, what was originally Unix, developed by AT&T, and it kind of goes through the whole history of that, and they released the source code up to Unix System 5, which is like about 7 years old or something now. But it kind of goes into the whole genealogy of it, if you will, and talks about, you know, where Mach came from, which is what Apple stuff is based on, and Linux and BSD and everything. And it goes into the fact about the, BSD was tied up for years because AT&T was, going after them because they had a couple of lines of original AT&T source code in there. So during that time, Linux kind of picked up, and for those of you know, probably everyone's heard the story now, but Linus Torvald was a student in Finland or wherever in Scandinavia, and he was reading the Andrew Tannenbaum textbook on writing operating systems, and he decided to start doing this kernel thing. And I heard Richard Stallman, RMS, for some of you guys out there, heard him talking at one of the local colleges here, and he was going through the whole thing and how free software movement got started. And he was saying that, you know, really people should call it GNU Linux. GNU
right.
is a recursive acronym. It stands for GNU's not Unix. But he started the GNU project, and they were basically writing, like, Unix-like utilities because they started doing the utilities first rather than the kernel. So Linus Torvald and all the people that contributed on that really contributed on the kernel. So it's really GNU Linux. And about the only one that calls it that is Debian.
Debian. And Herd.
And well, yeah. Now Herd is the GNU project's kernel, and that'll
We're
be
trying.
Right. Well, it's still in process, and it's taken like forever. But you know, that'll be yet another you know, another fork or another distribution or another branch, if you will. Not really so much a distro, but it'll be another branch of things. But, you know, so anyway, interesting article on lamp.com, and then why Caldera released Unix, a brief history. Very interesting stuff.
Before I forget, I want to give a tip to the listeners. When I started using Linux, you know, it wasn't as popular as now. Books were expensive and or not plentiful. So I used to look for old System 5 books, you know, and you can get those, like, dirt cheap. You go to frickin', you know, Goodwill, and just find any System 5 book, and it'll teach you a ton about Linux, so, and it'll probably save you a lot of money. You want to talk about Debian by any chance?
I love Debian.
Oh. Why do you love Debian?
I don't know why. I started out with Red Hat, version 5. This is in my mini article. I'm a student. I haven't finished that article yet. I'll probably never finish anything.
Of course you will.
You gonna, like, finish school?
he'll finish school because he has to eat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I won't get anywhere.
So, and now, and you just sent me an email not too long ago. Said, yeah, I got, you were having some kernel panic problem, but then you reinstalled Debian, and you even got sound to work.
Right.
And then later on, you told me, well, it's actually not, it's not the most powerful. It doesn't have the latest stuff. Why is that? What's the difference between Debian and other distros?
Okay. I met some guy, just walked up to him, because he had a Debian shirt on in Fry's. I walked up to him.
Fry's is God.
I started talking to him. You know, I asked, where can I get Woody? Woody is the, all right, maybe I'll explain this before you start making assumptions. Debian, all their names for their distributions, their versions are like code named after the Toy Story characters. Because there's Rex, there's Ham, there's Slinky.
Potato. That's the one I've got.
Potato, yeah, I've heard that.
Potato is the current stable one.
Yeah, 2.2.
Version 5, R5. 2.2.5. R5. And the next one will be Woody. And there's always going to be a Sid. Sid is the evil one. Sid is the testing, and it's always going to be called Sid, from what I understand. And once it moves, and it stays that way. It stays frozen. So once we move to Woody being stable, then Potato will be frozen. You can't modify it in any sort of way. It's just stable, and always be stable. Then you can go for whatever you want. And Potato doesn't have KDE, and I don't like that. But Woody does. And Woody, you can download in .raw format. I learned that you can change the file name. If you're on Windows, just change the file name to .iso and burn it. It should be fine. I'll put more of that in my article. I don't know why I like Debian so much. It's just I saw it. I liked it.
And you know what? That's all that matters, Condor. And you can find Condor's article at oldschoolfreak.com. Now, Rex, you use a couple of different things. In fact, you busted out your laptop, and you had a couple of Unix operating systems on it. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, actually, let's talk a minute first, too, about using virtual machines on your machine. You know, for the Macintosh people out there, you know, you've heard of Virtual PC, which on the PowerPC Max lets you emulate a Pentium processor and run Windows 95 or 98 or whatever. Well, they have that Connectix makes Virtual PC for Windows as well, and there's also VMware, which has been around for a while, and they're doing the same type of thing. VMware even has, I think it's called VMware for Linux, whereby it's the virtual machine running under Linux, so if you need to run a Windows kind of application, you can do it that way. But what I had on at the time, I had the main OS, because that's the only version of Virtual PC that I have, is under XP on this new laptop. And then I had a Red Hat virtual machine installed in there, and I also have another boot for multi-booting on the thing, so it goes into BSD. But what's really cool is, and I've actually started playing around with it now, I've got a couple of other distros that are like firewall and security types of things. So what's cool is with this virtual machine, and you can obviously run it on a desktop as well, you can have several different installations and several different distributions and play around with it. and you could theoretically have multiple running at a time. Now, mind you, it runs slower than just the native processor, but you can have several different distributions all set and ready to go, and you can just, you know, boot into the various ones that you need. So there's a distro that's called Trinix that boots off a CD, and it has Snort and Nmap and all kinds of other security types of things on there. So you boot it from the CD, it downloads the rest either off the hard drive or off the net. There's another one called IPCOP that's a firewall, but you know, theoretically you could have as many as you had hard disk space. Because what it does is it writes out the virtual hard drive, becomes one file on that host operating system. And it has sound, it has video, of course. It can bridge to your network card. So no matter what network card, I've got a hardwired 10100 RJ45 and my Wi-Fi 802.11b. So whatever way I'm connected out, when I'm running that virtual machine, it bridges out across that through their virtual network card out to my actual network card, whoever I'm connected, and I can connect out under my Unish operating system. I was just looking through my kit here. I've got, there's FreeBSD, there's OpenBSD, there's Corel Linux, which is non-existent anymore.
Right.
There's Red Hat, there's Debian, there's Slackware, there's an older version of Linux, there's Solaris, and I think that's about all of them I have that are Unish-based, but, you know, so there's all kinds of...
Great for experimentation.
Yeah.
Corel Linux, I think they got some of the source code from Debian.
Right, yeah, it was a
distribution,
and hopefully they were going to release some of that back. There was another company in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, that was picking that up.
Yeah, who was that? I read about that.
Can't remember who they were, but they were picking up that stuff, and they were going to try to do some continued. Because Corel actually had a very nice front end. You know, that's one of the big criticisms that you know, most any of the Unix systems have is that, you know, it's not easy for Joe Sixpack to install. You know, the guy who's still running on his Packard Bell 486 running Windows 95.
Right.
Goes and tries something else, and you know, if it's the least bit challenging, you know, they kind of give it up.
And you know, you can't blame them. I mean, everybody wants a computer that's useful. They want to be able to do all those things. They want to get on to AOL. They want to listen to their music. I actually tried both of those Corels, the first and second edition, and they were nice. They were pretty simple, you know, pretty simple to install. They didn't quite do very well on my laptop, not like SUSE, but I did try them.
Two things: is it pronounced SUSE or SUSE?
I say SUSE just because I like it. Just I like to say Linux, you know. Yeah, you know what? Anybody can say it any way they want, you know.
They're gonna... called Linux.
Linux. I think that's dyslexia, actually.
I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah. Right now, I use, my favorite machine is I got a Pentium 100 with a command line only of 7.2. SUSE 7.2 has been my all-time favorite. I have 7.3, but I really love 7.2, and right now I'm using a command line only. It's as simple to use the command line as the GUI, I think, especially with their YAS2 interface. It's great. I highly recommend it. I think I recommended it the last show. I'm going to pimp it again.
Now, the other thing that I would like to really say is that I was talking to someone at my that I know, and I was really talking to him about our reliance on some of these things. It was around the subject of Windows Media Player 8, and
uh-huh.
That's what kind of brought it up. And that we rely on Windows too much. I mean, it's very simple to use, and I'm not. If Windows was open source, I would love it. I really would.
It's a good product.
That's never going to happen, though. Not in this lifetime and not in this universe. Maybe in a parallel universe, you know. But you know, the thing is, you got to give it some of its dues in the sense that, you know, think back to the pre Windows 95 days for those of you old school enough to remember that.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I was making a living dealing with computers and doing support and doing everything else. And, you know, Windows 3.1 was just pretty plain hard. I mean, it was better for most people than command lines, but it was just hard. And when, you know, Microsoft, you know, they make a lot of money, say what you want about them, but, you know, you can say that Bill Gates is, you know, Satan's son or whatever you want to say. But
he is Borg.
There you go. But, you know, they put a lot of work into it, Matt, and, you know, they put together a pretty solid product, and it's getting better and better, you know, every time things go along. you know, is it ever going to be open source? Probably not. The government's talking about, you know, forcing them with the whole lawsuit to give to an independent third party expert to see if you know, the browser can be decoupled from the operating system, which Microsoft claims it can't. But you know, another interesting thing, just talking about OSs in general, is that there's been kind of some rumors about this, and this would be awesome if it happened, would be seeing Apple port OS X over to the Intel platform.
That would be great. I would be all over that.
Because you would have, you know, you would have a Unix-based operating system with a you know, nice front-end GUI and everything else in that, and that could give Microsoft some serious run for their money.
Oh, definitely, because there's tons. I know lots of people that buy Macs just because it's simple to use. You know, I would know young people, and they would say, "Oh, well, my parents use Macs. I use Macs because my parents bought Macs because they're easy to use." You know, it's beautiful, and plus, you'd have that Unix power underneath. That would be great. I would buy it. I would definitely buy it.
What Macintosh started to do is they started to give Macintoshes to schools to get the kids hooked on, so that way later, because, hey, I know how to use a Mac.
That's right.
And,
you're familiar with it, why not buy another one?
I was really trying to get it. I'll make this short. That we started talking reliance on Windows, but, I mean, if Windows was open source, it's not going to be.
No.
Maybe they might release the source code for 95. What? Maybe in 20 years or so. I'm not sure. But if they released it, they would fix some of the problems. It would be really great. And what I think they should start doing on some of these, like, e-machines, they should actually start including, like, Red Hat. Some of these people, like, maybe grandmas, don't know that they're really what they're running. They'll maybe play music on there, check their email, and do a few things. Maybe they should just stick Red Hat on there. And
well, you know, they have done that some with like some internet appliances. And when you guys were over at my place, remember those eye openers that I had? That was the same kind of an idea.
Yeah,
that was actually used QNX, which is a, you know, another Unix offshoot, but. The idea is, if it's an appliance, right, you shouldn't really care what you're running as long as you can get your email and, you know, play your music or whatever.
Exactly. But Red Hat is not that simple yet. It's not.
My understanding, too, from, like, when Apple, you know, they put, you know, they put millions of dollars in and lots of years of work in it coming out with OS X, but they had, you know, they had hired a lot of people who were really deep into, you know, being involved in... like FreeBSD and OpenBSD and all that, and they're actually on Apple's payroll as they're developing OS X, and they're still working, you know, they're still committers. The BSD system works a little different than Linux, you know, where you know, a lot of it comes back to, like, Alan Cox and Linus Torvald, who, you know, would decide whether the things are going to go in or not, but BSD has these things called committers, has people called committers, and so they're really high-level people who've been involved in doing the development, and, you know, and they're different people involved in certain things of it. But so a lot of these, you know, high-level committers for BSD was hired by Apple, and they you know, in their free time, they're still working on doing the BSD types of things and that. But, you know, and there's been some speculation in the trade press as well. If that would happen, you know, Macintosh could still have their, you know, have their thing and have everything else in it. But, you know, if you think about with Apple's cloud and hardware and everything else and all the front-end work they've done, and turning that around somehow, and if you could kind of combine the efforts, you know, look at how many distros we even talked about tonight, let alone there's probably twice as many as we've talked about, you know, and if you could kind of take and turn around and combine that kind of effort, Microsoft would have some serious run-in for their money, you know?
They would. And think of the installed customer base they already have, all these Linux users for all these different distributions, different loyalties. They could all combine. Ooh, would we be creating another Microsoft?
Oh, I don't know. We'd be kind of distributed still, you know. I mean, Apple would still be Apple. Microsoft isn't going to go away, you know, no matter what they do, you know, and you know, unless Bill Gates starts like eating children on live TV or something. People, Microsoft.
This is a revolution.
Yeah,
I believe it is. I want to talk quickly. Since we've spent so much time on this, I'll talk quickly about some brand new distributions that are coming out. Mandrake 8.2 with 65 meg install, I think that's great. SUSE 8.0, I might actually buy some powerful hardware to use that.
Get out, man. Say it ain't so.
I know, believe it or not.
Tell it to the man.
I'm caving. And then finally, Lycoris. Now, I've read about a lot of these on Slashdot. Lycoris is supposed to be the XP killer. It's gorgeous. It looks good. kind of like iMac and XP. It's got the nice, you know, cloud-like desktop. But I read that there might be a review that says otherwise, that that it's not quite the XP killer, that it's not quite as easy to use, not as powerful. So I'd still like to try it out. $30, I'd pay for it. You can actually buy an HP box with Lycoris installed. I think for like $450. That's a pretty good deal, especially for a Linux distro, pre-installed, everything works, sound, burner, everything. So that's a quick update on some late Linux distributions.
I want to pop a couple others in under, too. There's been some stuff on Slashdot and everything, too, about Dell dropping support for Linux. They used to give you the option of buying Linux pre-installed Red Hat, I guess.
I heard that.
And nope. they've been dropping that stuff out.
IBM is still strong on that, though.
Yeah, yeah. IBM is very strong towards Linux because it's free. I mean, they've ran three different Linux commercials.
Right, and they have Linux basically for their mainframe computers.
Oh, yeah. WebSphere, all that stuff.
Here's another one I just found. It's called Lane OS. It's off a modified version of FreeBSD 4.5. So there's just tons and tons of distros. One I did want to mention, kind of bridging the gap between our Wilding stuff and that too, is a thing called Sputnik, and it's just like the Russian satellite. It's Sputnik dot what was it dot com or dot org?
It's dot com.
Sputnik.com, and it's another distro basically where you take and if you have cable or DSL or something in a wireless access point, you run this distro. It allows people who are members with Sputnik and who are also giving out letting people use their access. It allows you to have free access throughout the rest of the network, and then they say with time, as people start subscribing for access with Sputnik, you might actually even see make a couple of bucks back. So that's it's a CD-ROM based installation. It's yet another one that I put under my virtual machine, but it's Sputnik.com, Sputnik.com, to check that out.
You know, I would set up wireless network for the whole neighborhood, my neighborhood. But you know what? I doubt if half people in my neighborhood even have computers. You know, I thought it was pervasive anymore. I thought everybody had a computer.
Half the people in your neighborhood have teeth?
That's debatable. A lot still park their cars in their yard. I want to talk about some phones, baby. Oldschoolfreak.com. I want to talk about phones. First of all, I was flipping through the Spanish. I was flipping through TV and I landed on a Spanish channel because I saw these people in blue jumpsuits wearing baseball hats, and they had backpacks that were yellow payphones. And they walked around. This is in Medellin, Colombia, and they walked around and they were the public telephones. I'm assuming they were cellular. And it was great. People were happy. It added a little human interaction. They're using a payphone. They actually put in coins. And a couple of people asked the backpackers to plug their ears. But I thought that was great. You never see that in the States. They'd get mugged and the payphones ripped off their back.
In Medellin, Colombia, it's amazing. People are walking around doing that for money rather than everything else you think about Medellin.
Yeah, no doubt.
When are they going to have a picture on that in the back of 2600?
I don't know, but that'd be perfect. Oh man, I should have got a screen capture of it and sent it in. Something happened to me, and actually this is going to segue into the phone call I want to make tonight. I was at Alltel changing my service, changing my numbers, being the paranoid person that I am, and she changed my number in their computer, and she said, "Okay, now I need to program your phone." I said, "Well, can I program it?" I knew the code. This was pound start. Wait, gosh darn, I can't remember now. Oh, I got it in front of me. Hold on. Turn on my phone. Anyway, she said, "What? You know the code?" I was like, "Yeah, I know the code." So I busted it out. I think it's *#6391#. And here we go. *#6391#. Yep, that's it. So. This is for an Alltel. This is a Nokia 5185i. It's a CDMA. It's actually a tri-phone, analog, digital, and PCS. To program this Alltel phone, it's *#6391#, and then you get a little screen that says phone number. You enter your phone number, the 10-digit phone number, and then hit OK, and then you'll get the SID screen, system ID screen, and for the metropolitan area I'm in, it's a 2-digit number, and you would enter 000 and the 2-digit number. I'm sure it's easy to find wherever you are. And that's it, and your phone is programmed. So I did that, and she's all, "How did you know that? Are you a hacker?" I couldn't believe it. I said, no, no way. I'm not a hacker. I just enjoy phones and technology. And
dude, did you get her phone number?
I should have. Oh, but I got all their information on paging and all their frequencies that Alltel uses here in this city that I'm in. The last thing I want to talk about, actually, it's not phones. I went to, now where you guys are, there's tons of those small-time Mexican food restaurants, right? Not Taco Bell, but like, Filiberto's, Heriberto's, right? Lots of those, right?
Those, yeah.
Yeah, well, they have one here that it's the most technically advanced Mexican food restaurant in the mundo. That's world, for all you non-bilingual listeners. So I pull up to this place. First of all, there's an ATM inside. I see that through the window. I order my food and I get it, and there's a power. They have a power drive-through window. But before that, and the most amazing thing, they had two-way video drive-through ordering. It was great, and not to mention that there was an attractive woman taking my order. So, and I'm assuming it's wireless. I bet it is. I bet it's wireless video. So you could get an ICOM, RCR3. Video scanner and pick up that video. But it was great. It was for a little Mexican food place, it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. I don't think I've seen anything like that around here.
No, not even at like Jack in the Box. I mean, I thought it was amazing when they started having those big LCD screens, you know. But now we have the two-way video ordering is great. Were you saying something, Condor?
No.
So what did you do, man? Say, I'll take two burritos and flash me?
Yes. I should have. Now, I want to make a phone call now, and this might be painful, actually, for the listeners, because this is actually a phone call to Alltel, and I want to show the level of customer service you get, you know, if you don't go into the store. So who wants to hang up? Who wants to drop out?
Okay, I'll drop.
All right, I'll call you back.
Yep.
All right, now you're young, Condor. You're in school, and I hate to do this to you, but you need to learn these kind of things early, you know?
Huh?
All right, hold on one second. I dialed Alltel. I'm going to hit zero, right? Because I want a human right away.
Calling Alltel's Manal Communications.
All right, I hit zero.
Please hold while I transfer your call.
Okay, hit zero because I want a human, right?
I'm right here.
I know. I'm trying to get a human at Alltel. I dialed them. They answered. I dialed zero. We're waiting. You know what? Actually, I forgot to say it. I changed my service and they wiped out my voicemail.
You did?
Yeah. Oop. Oh, one for English. Hold music.
Thank you for calling Alltel Customer Support. If you are interested in becoming an Alltel customer, press 1. If you are an existing customer, press 2. Please enter your 10-digit mobile number beginning with area code.
Yeah, right. That's Alltel, not me.
Please listen to the following 4 options. To add an additional wireless, paging, long distance, or internet service, or to change equipment, press 1. To discuss a past due bill or to make payment arrangements, press 2. If you are experiencing technical difficulties, press 3. To check account information, make a payment, or to change your existing service, press 4. To speak with a service representative, press 0. To repeat the...
I press 0. I want a human.
...will be assisted by the next available service representative.
Thank you for calling Alltel. Our business office is currently closed.
Mm-hmm.
Our office hours are 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 a.m. to 6
p.m. Can you believe that? It took all that to find out they were closed.
Yep.
Unbelievable. I'm going to call Rax. Calling Rax. All right, he's coming on.
Yeah, man.
All right, it was painful. I think Condor, I'm starting to cry.
Mm-hmm.
Alltel is not friendly, not in the least. Yeah, I was telling you know when I went in and changed my service, I did. I changed it from nationwide to regional, and you have to pay extra. I had nationwide with voicemail, and I was going to regional, and you have to pay extra for voicemail on that. And I did that, and they wiped out my voicemail. That's why I think maybe you called and didn't leave a message, because I don't have voicemail now. So,
yeah.
And I can't get a human for.
Well, if you would have Winbox, it would leave a voicemail. But wait, Winbox is now charging.
Oh, Winbox has went the way of capitalism.
The Winbox is doing like Jerry's kids. They're, you know, please pay us.
Who's paying? Are you paying, Condor?
Well, you know what I thought. I said previously that I would support a company that's trying to do this. I mean, it's a great service, but you know, $9.95 a month.
Oh, wait a minute, and I'm just a poor student.
Yes.
It's $10 a month?
$9.95 a month. I don't even have a job.
if it was like $5, I would do it.
But they have a $6 service, and you get 100 minutes to call on phone to check your email or anything. And if you call and you go over the 100 minutes, then it's a nickel a minute.
Well, that's not too bad. Now, is it an 800 number still?
Yes, it is. With a $9 one, you get a direct 1-800 number.
Oh, no more extensions? So when are they wiping out our service, since we're not paying?
I think maybe a month.
Oh, really? Does it still work?
Yeah.
I haven't tried it lately.
I got a voicemail from Condor the other day.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay. Straight from Winbox. I still want to try a fax. You know what? Maybe I'll send a fax to you, Condor, just to try it.
And speaking of services that went out kind of like that, there was a lot of great telephony stuff that was going on, you know, during the dot-com boom. One was PhonePad, and you would do, basically it was doing voice over IP, but you would do call from your computer, and you could obviously dial to another computer. That's no big deal. We've been doing that for years. But it would connect you out to any other, you know, North American-based telephone for free. So, you know, you can. I was taking and dialing out back from that, and you know, down off of Hawaii, I was doing all my calls back here, and it didn't cost me a dime. And I actually, you know, because I was using it a lot, and they gave you a direct toll-free number, 800 or 877 or whatever. And the, you know, so I was using it quite a bit. So I, you know, I upped for the extra. They gave you like, I don't know, you know, 30 minutes a month or whatever. So I was paying them for the extra thing. And that was really cool. And there's another one, kind of somewhat along the lines of what Winbox is called, U-Reach. The letter U, then the word reach. And that was doing some stuff too. And you could do voicemail and fax and email, and I think it even had, at one point, I think it even had an email, and it would call you up and read you, do text-to-speech synthesis and read you your email.
Yeah, that's fun. But that was always pay, right?
They had a free service, and then you could add on some other stuff in it with that, too.
Okay. You guys ever use your computer for voicemail? Like for an answering machine?
I just used
Debian. Debian has a package for that.
Oh, it does. What's it called? You know?
It doesn't cost anything.
No, what is it called?
It's free.
No, what is it called? What is its name?
One second. I'm going to do something real quick. One second.
But no, I just use, you know, from...
I think the Secret Service is at Condor's house. Oh, my God. Listeners, you're listening to a bus live on the air.
Yeah, great.
Unbelievable.
But, no, you know, I don't bother doing that because, you know, I'd have to keep a machine running and everything else here, so...
Sure. Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh.
I pay for it from Quest.
Right. Now, you have your wireless through Quest?
No, mine is VoiceStream.
Okay. Are you satisfied with them?
Yeah, I like them a lot. I like the technology behind it. You know, Jamie Lee's cute and everything else in it, but I like the technology behind it. The GSM is actually, it's a different frequency, but it's what is mainly, you know, used in Europe.
Right.
At 1900 megahertz, and I think the European standard is like 900 megahertz or something. But what's cool is you have a little SIM card in there that has all your phone numbers and the module. So when I switched phones into my, you know, the little teeny tiny Barbie phone that I have now, just pull out the card, pop in the other. You don't have to call up. You don't need ESIDs. You don't have to reprogram. You don't have to do anything.
Right. We were checking out that SIM card I brought that I found at Electronic Surplus, and we were checking all the info on that on your phone.
Electronic Surplus. What is it? Do you know the name of it?
Oh, of the one in your area? I don't remember the name, but when I come down for the next meeting, I'm going to take you guys, and this place is heaven. You can find anything you want. You can make any project. You will go there. You can have no idea. You will go there. You will have like five projects when you come out of there.
But Goodwill?
No, no. It's this. It's literally an electronic surplus. It's just they buy just everything, and it's just like a warehouse stacked to the ceiling with anything and everything you can think of. I've got a couple here in my town. One that's really good, and I get, shoot, that's what the computer is right now. I got it from there, and I rebuilt it. Actually, one, two, three of the computers in my room I got from this place, and I'm running. And this place in your city is great. It's way bigger. It's awesome. I highly recommend it. If listeners, if you have an electronic surplus store in your town, and I know you can find one if there is one, go, and you'll learn a lot. You'll get a lot of electronics, a lot of computers, anything really cheap, and you'll create something after you come out of there. It'll give you some great ideas.
Under what's the name of that voicemail service on your distro?
Oh, I really don't know the name of it because.
How much does it cost? I'm kidding.
Oh, it's free. It doesn't cost anything.
It's free, I'm telling you. So we told listeners it's a secret service at your house, dude. But it was probably just your parents, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, the secret parents.
Talk about for a minute is when you were back here in town last time when we did a little bit of beige boxing, but at the pedestal there was...
No, we did not.
You did not?
We did not beige box.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't beige. It was silver in color, wasn't it?
Anyways.
But, no, the pedestal was a little bit different. You couldn't get a dial tone anywhere.
Yeah, that was a weird junction box. I like the other ones that... No. I mean, if the listeners... You know, I was reading about... I was talking to a telco guy about this, and he was telling me that there's different types of cans, and one type... has posts and one doesn't and one has gel caps. Yeah, I don't know if we should be talking about all this stuff we learned from books and the internet on the radio show, Rax.
Oh, that was virtualized, right?
That's right. We were thinking about it and talking about it. But if you could, you know what? I'll tell you what. If somebody was going to do something like that, the best place to go that I've heard about are basically old strip malls because they've got a big box in the back full of 66 blocks, you know, 110 blocks, whatever they are, and most of the time they're open. Or if they're not, they're like, you know, held together with, you know, like a screw, you know, that you can take out with your hand. So they're wide open usually, and you've got tons of things to explore. But, of course, I would never advocate such a thing.
Don't try this at home.
That's right. I'm just saying that those vulnerabilities do exist. In fact, in your town, in your guys' hometown, I would go to old strip malls, and they would have those old four or five post blocks right on the wall, totally exposed, not even a box around it. So it's not like they're hidden. It's not like they're secured. You know, it's all wide open. Everything's wide open. You can open up any telco can and get a dial tone.
You've heard.
So I've heard. You know, this is a good show, guys. If we don't get arrested from this show, I don't know what else we can do. I mean, this is about it. This is probably the worst we could ever get. So I think we're safe from here on out if this goes up and the secret parents don't show up at our houses. You know what? I want your guys' help this time because I've been deciding lately. Oh, actually, Rax helped with the last one, Kraftwerk, which is awesome. What do you guys want as the outro music? I want that virus song. Who's that by?
Deltron 3030.
Is that new?
That's been around for a while. I'll put that up so you can FTP it down.
Yeah, do it, man, because I want that as the outro. All right, guys. Good show. Condor, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
You're safe?
I'll run the Brave on.
Oh, but someone must be tapping his line. His volume went down a whole bunch.
Oh, it did. You're safe, dude?
I can barely hear him.
Condor?
Yeah, I'm on the bad phone, Rax. I think it might be your speaker. I'm not sure.
All right, well, as long as you're safe.
Okay, I think so.
All right, well, I will see you guys next week. Rax, good to talk to you again.
Later, man.
This is Radio Freak America, Episode 4, Feed the Media. Vibration.